Greetings, everyone. Welcome back to the Morning Lineup podcast for Thursday, January 11th, 2018. I'm Anthony Kastrovitz, and I don't want to alarm you. I don't want to wake you from your slumber, but we have some actual hot stove news. The hot stove is indeed heating up, and Jay Bruce is heading back to the Mets, a reported three-year, $39 million deal. Bruce, of course, was with the Mets for the tail end of 2016 after being traded from the Reds, and the first half of 2017 before being traded to the Indians. And he was very good for them down the stretch, but the Mets still have a need for Bruce in that lineup, still trying to make it work around what could be a really good starting staff if everybody stays healthy, still trying to build some offense around them. So Jay Bruce back in Queens. Our executive reporter at MLB.com, Mark Feinzan, confirmed the story for MLB.com. Here's what he had to say about the Jay Bruce deal.
Jay Bruce's stay in New York was cut short last summer when the Mets traded him to the Indians in August. His second stint in Queens should be considerably longer after Bruce and the Mets came to terms on a three-year, $39 million contract Wednesday. Bruce's deal is the second largest for a free agent position player this winter, trailing only Carlos Santana's three-year, $60 million pact with the Phillies. With the biggest bats still available, we're looking at you, J.D. Martinez, Eric Hosmer, and Lorenzo Cain, that's likely to change at some point. But could Bruce's deal be the one that gets the market moving? It's unlikely given the expectations for the previously mentioned players, but given the inactivity of the market to this point, anything's possible. As for this deal itself, the Mets bring back a proven slugger who crushes right-handed pitching and has averaged 28 home runs per season with a 790 OPS since breaking into the majors in 2008. Bruce has been one of the most consistent power sources in the game, hitting at least 25 home runs in seven of the past eight seasons, topping the 30 mark five times during that stretch. The Mets also get a guy who thrived in New York, swatting 37 home runs with a 795 OPS over 153 games in parts of two seasons with the Mets in 2016 and 17. For a team that ranked ninth in the National League in runs scored and OPS, Bruce should be welcomed back to Citi Field with open arms.
All right, let's bring in my friend and colleague, Richard Justice, the birthday boy, Richard Justice. And first of all, Richard, I'm sure there's nothing you would rather be doing on your birthday than recording a podcast with me.
No, I want to be fanning the hot stove. That's what I want to be. Come on, baby, you can heat up. Come on, let's go. More wood, more fire. That's what I want to be doing.
Well, we had some, I guess you could say, smoke and not fire on Wednesday. There were reports and rumblings that Gerrit Cole to the Astros was, quote, imminent. Turned out not to be imminent. Jeff Luhnow, the Astros GM, had to throw some water on that fire, basically, and say nothing was close. The Astros are working out a lot of things. So that is not a done deal, as it looked to be at one time on Wednesday afternoon. But obviously, the Astros owner, Jim Crane, earlier in the week said that the Astros are aggressively pursuing starting pitching. And they have a really good group, whether they do anything or not. They've got a deep group. Obviously, Justin Verlander acquisition helped a lot, but, you know, Gerrit Cole is still a possibility there. He's still a possibility in multiple places. But, Richard, what do you think down there in Houston? What do people think? What do you think about the possibility of Cole coming to Houston in a trade?
Yeah, I think the first thing is it's a shock to the system. It's we're not standing pat. We think we have to get better. We love where we are, but this is an impact guy. And then we could have a front three of Verlander, Keuchel, and Gerrit Cole. The second part is economics. They have Dallas Keuchel and Charlie Morton for one more year. Keuchel's represented by Scott Boras. He has resisted overtures to sign an extension. They have Justin Verlander. So you get Cole. You now have Verlander and Cole for two more years, and they feel like the window with is really two more years. That's what Verlander and Jose Altuve are signed for and would have a chance to win again. But they've kicked the tires on Christian Yelich, on Chris Archer. I think they're not planning to tweak the roster, that if they did something, it would be big. You know, I think, but they've also let the Pirates know our top guys, Kyle Tucker and Forrest Whitley, particularly Forrest Whitley, they're not available. We expect Whitley to pitch sometime next year. Does it make them better? You know, Keuchel and McCullers both spent time on the disabled list the last 2 years. Colin McHugh was on the disabled list last year. So it would be more of a certainty. And I think they look at Gerrit Cole and think, you know, we could tweak him. Like, while he's got a great fastball, he needs to throw the changeup more, the slider more. And one of the things we really emphasize here is pitch usage. He's pitching now for one of the teams that threw a higher percentage of fastballs, I think, than almost anybody. and he would be coming to a team that throws a lower percentage of fastballs than almost anybody. So they would, no question, they would be excited about getting 2 years of Gerrit Cole before he signs with the Dodgers. But I'm not sure, I'm not sure if they're going to, when you see this much smoke around it, you would assume they're going to be able to finish the deal, but who knows?
Yeah, who knows? And we know the Yankees have been on a Cole, and, that's another team, to your point about pitch selection, that's another one that would be an interesting environment for him to transition to, more of a breaking ball oriented approach. And, maybe that would be good for Gerrit Cole. So sometimes a change of scenery helps, because, it's a guy who just hasn't lived up to the billing of the raw stuff just yet. But, something special is looming in there, and he's a special guy in this game. Has leadership skills, and I could see him picking Justin Verlander's brain a little bit and elevating his career that way. But so we'll see what happens.
And the pitching coach here, Brent Strom, would love to get his hands on Gerrit Cole. The guy that he had an impact on Verlander. Obviously, they take guys like. Will Harris, Chris Davinsky, Charlie Morton. They told Charlie Morton, you're not going to throw your curveball a little more. You're going to throw it a lot more. And, there was that playoff game where Lance McCullers finished the game with like 100 straight curveballs. And that's what they believe. If you've got a weapon, you use that weapon. And I think Verlander would tell you he benefited from it. And I think Gerrit Cole would probably benefit from it too. But it hasn't happened, and we don't know that it's going to happen.
All right. Well, until that happens, and even if that doesn't happen, the Astros profile pretty well in the AL West, but it is a division that has improved. And I guess we could just start right there, Richard. We are going to go over all the divisions in baseball briefly and try to come to some consensus on, what are the most competitive divisions in baseball right now. Let's start in that AL West. The Astros won it by 21 games in 2017, and that was a direct reaction to a certain columnist who will not be named, picking the AL West this time last year as the most fascinating division in baseball, the most competitive division in baseball, the most unpredictable division in baseball. And the Astros blow everybody out of the water. So please don't go back and look at that piece from, again, a fellow who will not be named. But I do think...
No, are you saying the fellow has no name or he will not be named?
He will not be named here.
All right. Gotcha.
Plus, I don't want to butcher my own last name. That would be bad.
Okay.
But
there you go.
Obviously, the Astros are still the class of this division, but it is evolving. The Angels have made tremendous strides this winter with the addition of Shohei Ohtani, Ian Kinsler. Justin Upton is, for all intents and purposes, an acquisition for them. They extend him after acquiring him for the latter part of 2017. And Zach Cozart, of course, at third base. So it's a team that's starting to look much stronger than it did a year ago. Building around Mike Trout much better and killing those Mike Trout think pieces, where they're wasting Mike Trout's prime. The Mariners are always interesting. Jerry DePoto is always wheeling and dealing and tinkering. Last year, they took a step back. Very frustrating year for them. A lot of injuries in that rotation. So better health in that group would certainly elevate their cause. The Texas Rangers, they're not doing the big, bold, aggressive signing this offseason that we've seen in some offseasons past in Texas, but they have made some moves to help shore up that pitching staff, perhaps, Doug Fister, Mike Minor, and still probably some more work to be done there. So, and then the Oakland A's, who I think we'd all acknowledge probably have, fainter chances in this division than the others, but, a lot of power in that lineup. Stephen Piscotty could be a really nice addition for them, but it's obviously more of a transitional experience there in Oakland. But what do you make of this division? What is the biggest threat to the Astros right now?
The Angels are really good. What are they going to get out of Shoemaker and Richards? We were having the same conversation a year ago. Tyler Skaggs, Andrew Haney, potentially they are really, really good. And the way I look at it is that so they have two teams good enough to win a World Series. If the Angels or Astros won the World Series, you wouldn't be surprised. If the Mariners made the playoffs, you wouldn't be surprised. Right now, Texas is a work in progress. And Oakland, while, they've got a lot of young players that are interesting to watch, they're not there yet. So that's the way I look at it. Two teams, two World Series teams, one other potential playoff team. I think that makes for a pretty strong division.
It does. It does. Let's go out to the NL West, where, of course, the other defending pennant winners from 2017 are the LA Dodgers. They've won this division routinely in the last 5 years. And, you know, the Giants took a major step back for a long time there. It was Dodgers, Giants, you know, button heads there, and Dodgers winning the division, Giants winning it all every other year. Things have changed dramatically with the Giants, you know, major regression in 2017. And lo and behold, the D-backs and Rockies step forward. They both claimed a wild card spot, and the D-backs go on to the division series loss with the Dodgers. So it's all about trying to keep pace with LA. We know that that LA team has so much depth, and now they're under the luxury tax threshold, which, you know, that'll be a factor for them a year from now. But for now, even getting under that number, you know, they still have a devastating amount of depth on that team, a really strong farm system. So it's a tough team to keep pace with. But obviously, the D-backs and Rockies have built something special as well. I think the Rockies have been particularly aggressive in this otherwise slow hot stove season, you know, really beefing up their bullpen with Wade Davis, and they bring back Jake McGee, and they bring in Brian Shaw. The Padres, again, there's another team, more of a transition period, but they're starting to, you know, make some waves in the marketplace and show that they're, you know, starting to take the next steps toward contention. And I mentioned the Giants with that major regression, hoping for major progression, hoping for a lot of bounce back seasons there. But, you know, they're also going for it. They bring in Evan Longoria. It still remains to be seen what they do in that outfield, which was a mess last year. But, you know, something's coming there in that group because they have their, you know, they have too many irons in the fire for it not to happen. What do you make of the NL West? Is there a team that could legitimately push the Dodgers in 2018?
Well, I think the Dodgers are going to win. I think we would both agree they're going to win the NL West for a sixth straight year. And or would that be? Yeah, sixth straight year. But I think, I mean, you know, I think the Diamondbacks and Rockies are good enough to play in the postseason. Would it surprise me if either of them won the World Series? Well, when you've been to the postseason the year before, I don't think anything would surprise you. So, I mean, I think you have three legitimate teams there. That makes it a strong division. And I'll tell you, the Padres are one to keep an eye on. You know, they're going to have like 10 guys competing for five rotation spots, but they have a ton of young pitching at Double A that they expect to get to Triple A, maybe to the big leagues. And, you know, when you have so many young players, you can get better in a hurry. The Giants, I'm probably like you. I don't quite see what's going on there. I hope they, you know, I know they're in a win now mode. As long as you have Bumgarner and Posey, that's where you're at. You go get Evan Longoria, not for a rebuilding, but I don't know what they're going to do in center field. I don't know what they're going to do in left field. I don't know what they're going to do at the back of their rotation. And then you're talking to fill those things in free agency. You're talking 200 and you're talking a big payroll, the biggest payroll in baseball. So that's the way I look at that division. It's still the Dodgers and everybody else. But they got pushed a little bit last year. You know, they won it by 11 games, and had a tough month there in the second half. I think there are three playoff teams there.
All right, let's wind our way from west to east. Let's go to the NL Central, Richard. It's the Cubs' world there still, but the Brewers did push them, surprisingly so, in 2017. They pushed them every step of the way. The Cubs ended up winning the division by six games. St. Louis Cardinals had an 83-79 season that, by Cardinal standards, I mean, that might as well have been a, you know, 100-loss season. That's how it felt to them, missing the playoffs for the second straight year. So they've certainly tried to address that this winter. And then the, you know, the Pirates and the Reds, it's more of a transition situation. We mentioned the Pirates have the possibility to trade Gerrit Cole there, which would obviously signal a significant retool on their part. But if they keep Cole, if they keep Andrew McCutchen, they'll try to push ahead and hope for primarily just better production from that lineup, you know, more power and, you know, Gregory Polanco and Starling Marte playing a whole season as opposed to a half season because of suspension. You know, maybe there's some upside in that group, but you know, for me, I see it as a two team race with the Cubs and Cardinals. I'm still not totally sold on the Brewers. I'd like to see a little more aggression in this marketplace because I do fear some regression from that group. But you know, this has been a really fascinating division in the recent past. There was a time where it was a real three headed monster with the Cubs, Cardinals, and Pirates. Maybe another three-headed monster is emerging, but it's still, you know, still the Cubs' division to lose.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said. I think the Brewers want to and need to add at least one more starting pitcher, just for the depth, especially considering they don't know when they're going to have Jimmy Nelson out for the year. But I would say, from a a bigger picture standpoint, the Brewers are in a great spot. They have a really good farm system. I think on our MLB top 100, I think they tied for the most players on the top 100 in seven guys. So the future's bright there. It's what do you do in the short term? And I agree with you. The Cardinals have had a very, very good offseason. We would still like them to get a guy to pitch the ninth inning, maybe a guy to play third base. I mean, that's two more very significant moves. I thought they would sign Wade Davis. Turns out shows what I know. But, you know, a trade for Alex Colomé makes some sense. And, you know, Josh Donaldson, they're going to keep pestering the Blue Jays about Josh Donaldson until they get an answer that they like. And that answer may be no, but I like them and they've done the right thing. And the other two teams are just, you know, they're not there yet.
In the American League Central, the Cubs 2016 World Series opponent, the Indians have owned that division the last couple of years. The Twins were a remarkable story in 2017, getting in that wild card game really against all odds. I mean, they traded pieces at the trade deadline. They were coming off 103 loss season as it was. So for them to get that wild card game kind of signaled their team on the come. Their position player group is a lot of young upside in that group and starts with Byron Buxton. And if he can have a full season like his second half in 2017, you really have a special player. So that's not a team to be taken lightly. And they are certainly beating the bushes in this marketplace, trying to get some pitching help. But, you know, until or unless that happens, man, the Indians are in a good spot in this division. They have their own challenges. They lost some pieces in their bullpen. They lost Carlos Santana. But, you know, their core is still really strong. Their rotation is still very strong. And they just so happen to have three, you know, if not outright rebuilds, then at least retools going on within their division in Kansas City, in Detroit, and on the south side of Chicago. So this will be one of those where it's hard to imagine anybody picking against the Indians in the AL Central, but you know, if anybody's going to give them a challenge, it's the Twins.
Yeah, and no knock on the Indians. You know, like on opening day last year, they probably were as close to a perfect team as baseball had. At least, you know, that's the way you looked at an opening day. They really, really didn't have any issues. Other, you know, Michael Brantley was back, and he's a question going forward. And I can't wait to watch the Twins just to see what a hopefully Sano for a full season and Polanco and Buxton has a chance to be the most exciting as any player in baseball. So you're right. They need another starting pitcher. I'm sure they're going to go out and get a guy to help with that rotation a little bit. But they're in a very, very – they're in a great spot. And the others we just don't know about. I mean, I think it'll be interesting to see what the Royals look like on opening day. Is Hosmer and or Moustakas back with them? What does the rotation look like? But I know they were excited. You saw more of them than I did in terms of the young arms they have. The White Sox have a lot of young talent. And Detroit's, you know, in the first step of this process that's likely to – they lost 98 last year, and it's likely to be painful. But it's the Indians' world, and no knock on the Indians. They are better – they may be better than any team in baseball other than maybe the Houston Astros, and they didn't play each other in the postseason, so we don't know.
It would have been a heck of a series. Of course, the Yankees are going to have something to say about your statement, though, there, Richard, about the Indians and Yankees being the best, too. We'll see. It's loaded American League at the top end. But obviously, the Indians are – the difference there is just the strength of division just isn't what it is in the Central as it is in the East and West. And currently, Fangraphs projects the Indians to be 11 games better than the Twins. It's a very similar projection in the National League East for the Nationals. They're projected to be 11 games better than the New York Mets. And the Mets, Phillies, Braves, and Marlins are all projected to have a losing record. We know what's going on in Miami. It's a lot of unloading going on there. And that was some news on Wednesday was the word that Starlin Castro, who's a recent acquisition, of course, of the Marlins in the trade with the Yankees for Giancarlo Stanton, he'd like out of Miami. Christian Yelich, JT Realmuto, they could be both on the move. Atlanta is still rebuilding. The Phillies are surprisingly aggressive in this marketplace with Carlos Santana and some moves to their bullpen, and they're still looking for starting pitching. But I think that's as much about just trying to take a step forward in 2018 and then being in a good position for next year's loaded free agent class as it is anything else. And then the Mets, of course, you know, you promised me a healthy Mets rotation. You know, maybe I like their odds as of pushing things in the wild card, but it just doesn't feel like anybody's going to legitimately push the Nationals in the NL East because that Nationals team, they were one of those teams that, you know, climbed out of bed this offseason, really didn't have to make a move of any major consequence this winter to have a really good squad. And they might still do something in that rotation or maybe in that bullpen between now and spring training, or at least between now and opening day. But it's one of those few teams that look pretty strong on paper and no major holes.
Yeah, they're good enough to win a championship. And, you know, that's the only team in that division you can say that about. I think Atlanta and the Phillies will be interesting to see what the young talent looks like as they play through a season and see what players emerge, where we're at with Dansby Swanson and his career. You know, in the Mets, if the pitchers are healthy, they're a team you don't want to play. By, you know, they've got some holes in their lineup and some holes in their bullpen, but they're a good team. And if it's Matt Harvey's healthy, he's Matt Harvey, I mean, he might end up being their fourth starter. So, yeah, but it's Washington. Washington is legit, and they've been so good for these last six seasons that I think, given all that good work, we'd like to see them have some success in October before Bryce Harper hits free agency.
And they brought in Dave Martinez to shake things up in that managerial spot, and a rookie skipper in a must-win situation is certainly an interesting thing, but it's not a unique thing in this environment right now, because we got Aaron Boone in the Bronx, we got Alex Cora in Boston, and that brings us, of course, to the American League East. Richard, Red Sox-Yankees, look, there was a time where baseball couldn't get enough of this rivalry, and then I think we all collectively maybe had too much of this rivalry, but I think we're back. I think we're back to where it's a good situation for baseball in general. I mean, these are two fascinating teams, and the Yankees, of course, loaded up with Giancarlo Stanton, you know, to push the Red Sox, who have won this division the last couple of years. And it was one of those where you could feel a sea change going into the playoffs last year. I felt like the Yankees were a better postseason team, and sure enough, they proved to be. They got to Game 7 of the ALCS, even though they were the wild card entrant. And the Red Sox were, of course, ousted by the Astros in the first round. But beyond them, the Blue Jays, you know, it's a team that's getting older, but it's a team that's still trying to do this thing. You mentioned that Josh Donaldson, as much as the Cardinals keep pestering Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins about Josh Donaldson, he has not yet become a Cardinal. The Blue Jays want to take him into the year and see what they got. Hope for better health in that rotation. Starts with Aaron Sanchez and that blister that held him up so much in 2017. And then the Rays and the Orioles. Look, the Rays, obviously, when you move Evan Longoria, that signals to me the first significant rebuild, really, in the Stu Sternberg era. That has been a team that continually goes for it. And I think there's an acknowledgement that they are in some sort of major transition here. So I don't think the competitive effort is particularly earnest in 2018, but still a lot of a lot of good pitching on that club and a lot of good talent in general. I just don't think it's a true contender in the AL East. And then the Orioles, you know, losing Zach Britton for half a year is definitely not going to help what was already a shaky situation. They really fell apart in the second half last year offensively. Manny Machado, of course, entering free agency. We know he's been talked about quite a bit in this trade market. Nothing has transpired yet, but not hard to imagine some sort of rebuild, you know, being initiated there in Baltimore sometime before the end of the year. So Red Sox-Yankees is obviously the chief storyline here, but what do you make of the AL East in general?
The Fangraphs has the Yankees and Red Sox at 91 wins apiece. What do you think of that?
I don't totally dismiss it. You know, obviously, it's easy to get swept up in the emotion of the offseason. And when the Yankees add Stanton, there was a stat that the Red Sox hit 168 home runs last year. Giancarlo Stanton, Aaron Judge, Gary Sanchez, and Didi Gregorius hit 169 home runs last year. And you see stuff like that. And yeah, it's easy to get swept up in that kind of a stat. But and I'm writing about this for Sports on Earth. But you know, the Red Sox have a lot of areas for not crazy projection for 2018 for improvement. I mean, Mookie Betts, his slugging percentage went from 534 to 459 last season. So even if he meets himself somewhere in the middle there, you know, that's a big improvement. Hanley Ramirez had the 12th highest drop in OPS in baseball last season. So if he can get closer to his career norm, you know, that's a major progression there. A full season, Andrew Benintendi, you know, the sophomore year, you know, maybe he's making the adjustments to really be the hitter we expect him to be at the big league level. Rafael Devers, a full season of him. He was really strong for them in the second half last year. Xander Bogaerts played through a hand injury. Mitch Moreland, you know, we love our StatCast stuff. He had the 36-point gap between his expected and his actual weighted on-base average. That was the second largest gap in the game. Basically, that meant he had to do a ton of bad luck. So what I'm saying is there's a lot of room for improvement at offense just to come naturally, and that's before they go out and do something, which I think they will, be it JD Martinez or somebody else. And, you know, despite the glaring lack of power last year, they still scored the 10th most runs in baseball. So I think it's easy to dismiss the Red Sox, but just because of the emotion of the Stanton acquisition. But what I'm saying is don't dismiss them.
Yeah, and I would let's go to the Blue Jays. I would say, look, you can't do it as you're now constituted. And I don't care how good your prospects are and all of that. You need at least one more big bat. And I don't know. I think they have the payroll to do that. But to me, as long as you don't trade Josh Donaldson, you're saying we're in. That we've got Stroman and Happ and Sanchez, Estrada. We can win. We've got Osuna. We'll see on that. Baltimore is interesting to me. You know, I agree with you. Tampa Bay is just accumulating talent now, and they're going to try to get comfortable with the prices they can get for Colome and Archer, and they're going to move those guys too. Based on everything you hear, the Orioles are going to keep the thing together and try to make another run, and Dan Duquette's going to see how much pitching he can acquire to give Manny Machado the kind of send-off he deserves. I don't think, you know, you can dismiss the division as simply as it's just Red Sox and Yankees, but it's pretty close to that unless the two other teams make some pretty dramatic moves.
Yeah, a lot of things have to break right for sure. So where are we at now? What is the strongest division in baseball, however you measure that? I mean, if the Yankees Red Sox rivalry is strong enough to make the AL East the best division in baseball, if having the defending world champs and a highly improved Angels team is enough for the AL West, the NL Central, you got the Cubs Cardinals rivalry, which is always exciting. And in the NL West, you had three postseason teams last year, in the Dodgers, Diamondbacks and Rockies. And you have a Giants team, you know, legitimately trying to improve. Where do you think it is? Where's the true strength lie? What's your number one division right now?
My vote would be NL West. And that's that designation lacks the courage. Those three teams made the playoffs last year. I think the Padres have a chance to be a tough draw by the second half of the season. And the Giants still say they're in a win now mode. So I'll take that. You know, you could talk me into the AL West pretty easy. I like the Astros and Angels. I'm not sure what to make of the Mariners, the Rangers, like in the AL East, and the Rangers have some work to do. What do you think?
Well, I'm not going to make this mistake of tooting the horn of the AL West again like I did a year ago. I just named myself. Sorry. But I'll go with the AL East. I think that's enough for me. Red Sox, Yankees, the strength of that rivalry again. I'll get accused of East Coast bias, even though I live in Cleveland. Those are going to be must-see series. You know, when those two teams play each other, it's just going to be something you have to watch. There's so much history to that rivalry. There's so much present to that rivalry. I think it's going to be a great deal of fun. And again, I think there's probably more moves coming in both of those markets. You know, you'd love to see the Red Sox sign JD Martinez to really amplify things there. And of course, the Yankees could still augment their infield, or for all we know, they could be the team that gets Garrett Cole. We'll see. But I think that alone is strong enough. And I don't think the Blue Jays, Rays and Orioles are total pushovers. In fact, as we sit here today, the Blue Jays are projected to have a winning record. The Rays are projected to finish a game under 500, again, perhaps with some changes to come. But Yankees Red Sox is enough for me. But it's interesting. To me, for my money, the AL Central and the NL East are the only two divisions where you feel really, really comfortable with your division winning pick. And then to a lesser extent, the AL West with the Astros, just because the Astros are so darn good. But obviously the Angels are making every effort to push them, as are the Mariners and Rangers. So always a good conversation. Always love, you know, doing this division by division stuff, because that's where the meat of the regular season lies, is those division matchups. And, that's where you're truly tested. So my thanks, Richard, the birthday boy. Thanks for doing this. Any other great insights you want to give us on your birthday? Any words of wisdom?
No, just remember that here's one tidbit. Last year we had five teams that weren't the only five repeat teams in the playoffs. Right now, all six division winners are favored to win again. I don't know if they're going to, but at least that says something. Now, we all know the wild card races will be crazy, but hey, who knows? It's January.
It is, and still a lot to happen in January, February, probably March, the way things are looking. A lot of changes in store on some of these rosters. So we'll see what transpires. We'll be all over it here on the Morning Lineup podcast. Until then, my thanks to Richard Justice. Happy birthday, buddy. And thanks to you all for tuning in.